Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hello, and welcome to Sex, Psychics, and Psychedelics, Discovering Inner Liberation. My name is Banana Jane Garnett. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, a lover of freedom, and a relentless explorer of the mind. Please come join me on my journey in hot pursuit of inner illumination and liberation. For more about me, you can find me at The Banana Jane on Instagram. Now let's dive in. It's my great pleasure to introduce Dr. Jenna Abel. Jenna is a clinical psychologist, a teacher, a mentor, and a spiritual midwife. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to actually get to see you in person.
I know. You know, we've only actually met face-to-face once.
It was like a year ago.
It's good, though. I just knew I liked you. You made a good impression.
Well, you did as well, and you served also this amazing tea.
Oh, that's right.
When we had the tea.
That's right. I was really showing off with my tea there, wasn't I? To the group of therapists, really trying to make an impression myself, I see.
It worked.
Good to know. I know you're pretty much the busiest woman in our community. And by community, I mean sort of psychedelics, healers, therapists, you know, the lot. And it's a great privilege to get a bit of your time. So seriously, thank you. I guess there are a lot of people who need to be healed out there, huh?
It does seem that way.
It does seem that way, yeah. Well, look, let's get, I know you and I have got a lot to sort of share about because we're in the same field of work, and I really want to talk about the intersection of psychedelics, integration, EMDR, and all that good stuff, but I'd love to get oriented first. So can you just tell us a little bit about who you are in the world of psychedelics and what you actually do?
Wow, this could be like so many levels.
I know.
Am I?
Could you just tell me who you really, really are deep down inside, please?
We're going to go in for a deep dive. So let's see. Well, I've been a psychologist for, I think I was licensed in 2013. So, you know, I've had a private practice for the last... however many years that is, 7 years, 8 years.
Mm-hmm. And you're in Los Angeles, right?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So what is my role in the world of psychedelics? Well, about 12 years ago, I think it was about 12 years ago, I'm pretty bad with timing, so bear with me on that. It was a while ago. I started to sit in my own ceremonies intentionally, right? So working with plant medicines and...
Was that ayahuasca?
It was ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had had some experiences with some other medicines prior, but more recreational, I would say, although, you know, I received a lot in those. But my intentional work really started about 12 years ago and it was life-changing for me. It was also a lot of work. I'm really careful about kind of putting out this idea of a transformational fantasy. Right? I think a lot of what comes out right now and the articles, things people are reading, they come to it with this idea of, you know, well, I can have this one experience and it will change everything. Right? So I'm careful about that. So that really shifted everything for me. And again, it was continued work And
when you're saying work, do you mean work to kind of understand what happened, what you were experiencing in those ceremonies?
Yeah. So it was, you know, the going in, the preparing for the ceremony space, the being in the ceremony space, which can feel sometimes like a lot of work, the coming out. Now, how do I integrate this, right? Sometimes it's, you know, more active integration. Sometimes there's a passive integration that's happening, or a combination of those things. So I never, ever thought, oh, this is going to be something that I'm going to transition into, right? Or have some kind of specialty. It was more, wow, this is producing these profound changes in my own life. Mm. And what I started to notice is that as I was changing, the people who were coming to my practice were showing up differently, even the ones I'd been working with for years at that point, started to talk about things that we'd never talked about, we'd never explored, right? And it became much more alive for me.
Yeah, I can totally relate. I don't want to stop your flow, but I do want to just add something. I found it really fascinating as a therapist, because I was a kind of, I guess, more of a, I don't know, traditional therapist, psychotherapist, doing depth work. And then I had my own parallel psychedelic track. I was starting to take ayahuasca and open the box. And I remember this experience after ayahuasca of sitting with a client, and it was a regular client, and feeling completely different in a sort of relational way with a client. And it was as if that client was that much closer to me. I felt like we were much closer. It felt much more real. It felt much more connected. I felt like, oh, my job is more simple than I had been thinking. This is really like, this person is my brother. This person is my, you know, this person is me. We're all in this together. It's just a village, you know. It's like, it was very, very like profoundly orienting in terms of the help of, you know, the work of helping another human being.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and absolutely, right? That makes it so much more present, alive, really being in the room in that way. And I think it also, it's like that dissolving of boundaries. Of course, you're still upholding boundaries to uphold a frame, right, for the work. But there is a dissolving of boundaries, and it becomes, I think there's something that shifts with that inherent power structure that shows up when you have the therapist in the therapist chair,
right?
On the couch, right? And it became naturally much more collaborative, right? And egalitarian. Mm. And we're both two human beings in this room, right? Mm. So it was this beautiful natural shift that was happening. And then I had a lot of colleagues who were friends as well, who knew that I was doing my own work in this way. And they were having more and more, you know, clients showing up saying, asking questions. And so they were calling me for consultations and sometimes sending people my way. And so then it just really transitioned to, you know, probably, well, currently, about 3/4 of my private practice are people who are working with these medicines, right? Mm, mm-hmm. And so I'm really, you know, working to on the prep side and the integration side, right? And then I also consult with other therapists. I have a consultation group that I lead. I supervise interns who are wanting, you know, this to be their specialization.
Right, because I guess there are more and more tracks for this now to become a kind of legitimate intersection with psychotherapy. You can, you know, that increasingly there'll be ways to be that sort of that legal psychotherapist who also can help people go on journeys with psychedelics. And yeah, and now it's still, we're in kind of this no man's land, but obviously there are ways that we can do this legally and yeah, and help with the prep and the integration. And it sounds like you've found a natural niche. And then, of course, there's so much more demand now. I mean, it must feel like from where you're sitting, like, this is what everyone's taking psychedelics and everyone's waking up. Or, I don't know. I'm putting words into your mouth. You tell me.
Yes, it does feel like this huge wave coming in. Mm. And yet I'm also really grounded in the idea that this is one path of many and it's not a path for everyone. And in fact, you know, some of the people I work with in my private practice, we don't talk at all about psychedelics. That is not part of the conversation, right? So,
yet. I'm just bringing in my own stuff here because sometimes I feel like I'm just bombarded with psychedelic conversations. And it's funny when I spoke to my family in England about this podcast, I was like, I don't know if I should talk about psychedelics. I mean, isn't it like already just completely done? I mean, aren't we all bored to death of talking about psychedelics? They're like, over here, we don't talk about them that much, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I think there's a lot of people who are really hungry for information, right?
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. And so let's talk about that. I mean, what in general, what are people coming to you for help with?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think I have a lot of people who come to me because they're feeling stuck. They're feeling blocked. There's a sense that there's something else, but they can't quite get there and they don't know what's kind of in the way of that. I have a lot of people I work with that come with history of trauma, developmental trauma, attachment wounding, relational issues. I have people coming who are experiencing existential crisis. I think there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Especially right now, you know? Yeah. And then I have people who are coming because they want to experience spiritual growth.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it feels like psychedelics are kind of a shoo-in in terms of sort of accelerating experiences of spiritual connection, experiences of awe, mystical experiences, being able to reach that much further. You know, if you're in existential crisis, being able to reach that much further, starting to think in a way that feels more heart-centered. I mean, there are so many wonderful things about it. And I think for me, as a clinician, I feel where I get most kind of concerned is when it comes to sort of the trauma aspect. I think that, you know, psychedelics are a wonderful key because so often they get, you know, we get taken straight into our shadows. We get taken straight into our unfinished business, the child parts of us that experience trauma that we've sort of buried or tried to bury, put to one side because, you know, why kind of carry this amount of pain with us? And yet we do on a repressed level. So I guess, yeah, what concerns me is sort of the dives into the traumatic material, particularly that sort of like early attachment trauma in situations that might not be safe, like, you know, group ayahuasca experiences are fucking wild. I mean, I think back to my early days where I didn't know better. I just wanted to have the experience. And so I just went to some like crazy random gatherings. And then also like as an empath, as a sensitive person, then you're soaking up all this other crazy energy that's being released and there's no real follow-up on the other side of it. And I don't know. I just feel like, you know, stirring the pot can be so great and it has to happen if you really want to make sort of progress in terms of personal development. And yet, you know, we really need good containers for this.
I mean, the container is such a key, right? And I'm sure you've seen this. I've had so many people who've gone to ayahuasca ceremonies and I, like you, was like, oh, okay, that's all right. I have no idea what to ask. I have no idea who I'm sitting with. I have no idea what this is. I'll just show up, right? And it's such a potent experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, ayahuasca, what it's translated as the vine of death. And it's all about, it's about dismemberment, right? And so
what do you mean dismemberment?
Dismemberment, the breaking apart of everything, right? So we can have these experiences where everything we thought we knew we are around us gets completely dismembered, torn down, right? And if there is not proper container, or if it's not the right time, if it's not the right medicine that one is meant to be working with, right, it can create so much destabilization. I mean, I've seen people who have gone through an ayahuasca ceremony and it was very positive, you know, and yet they come out and they have this emergence of symptoms that is quite distressing and negatively impacting their life for sometimes years following.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think you could kind of, you know, you can open up these cans of worms on the one hand and not know how to deal with the worms or not have the right people around to help you deal with the worms. And then there's the other side of it as well, which I wonder if you've encountered that I've seen in my practice where, like, you know, there'll be a couple that will come in and they'll be in total distress because they don't know how to reconcile the ideal image that they found when they both did ayahuasca and they saw the divine masculine and the divine feminine in each other. And they saw this beautiful picture of sacred union and they saw that they would have a child together. And then, you know, cut to this like completely like out of their mind with, you know, just completely perplexed, no idea what to do, miserable couple with a screaming baby. And like how, you know, these huge, I actually think that's kind of the beauty of it, that you can see these beautiful images and then you get kind of slammed back down to earth. And then it's like, how do we move towards these images? But probably like you, I had done a lot of work on myself by the time I went to my first ayahuasca, which was now about 8 years ago. Even then it was so much to integrate, but you know, I had done a lot of work beforehand and then people are going into this not having done any work.
That's right. And, you know, when I had my first experience as well, I also had a supportive community around me, right, that really helped to hold that experience and helped me to integrate from that. Whereas a lot of people also, they may not necessarily have that, right? And so they're really then doing this almost in a vacuum. So yeah, there are so many amazing things that can come from it. And there is also this other side that doesn't get talked about as much.
I'm really glad that we are talking about it. And I'd love to talk a bit more sort of nitty gritty about what your, you know, what service do you provide to really help people through this, the arc of kind of, you know, deciding to do it and then, you know, integration post.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll talk about maybe some key elements that I typically am going to incorporate with anyone who comes my way. Firstly, I'm going to try and get a good sense of what is calling them to this type of work. I will typically do like a thorough intake, right? So history gathering and really looking at intentions, goals, what kind of support structure they have in place, what kind of work have they done prior, right? And so based on that, I'll have a good idea. Is this something that it could be something really valuable for this person? Mm-hmm. Are there things that are clearly contraindicated with this type of work? Like maybe there's a medical issue, or maybe there's just a real lack of a support system, or they're in a place where, you know, going and sitting in an ayahuasca ceremony for a weekend would really not be a good idea.
Yeah.
And so I'm really, you know, I'm really honest with people about what I'm seeing, what I'm sensing. Mm-hmm.
And do you guide in terms of, because obviously now there's all this information floating around and probably some accurate, some not, about what's good for what, you know. Some people believe that, you know, MDMA is the ticket for healing trauma. Other people would say, you know, psilocybin. Now we've got ketamine, which is, you know, more of a legal modality or more accepted. I don't know. I think there's so many different avenues. Do you guide people on that? How do you navigate that when people are saying, I'm thinking about this and I'm thinking about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, I do want to know, what are they thinking about and what's drawing them to that particular medicine, right? Sometimes people are drawn to something because they already have a relationship with it. Maybe they've had some recreational experiences, right, with psilocybin. So in that sense, I will talk to people about the different medicines. And really, if they're feeling strongly about one, but my sense is, I don't know if that's going to be the best one for you initially, right? I'm going to talk about it with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's the question of, you know, whether or not the client is on antidepressants. I mean, when people come to me to ask about this, I'm like, yeah, you know, I guess there is a world of intersection in terms of people on antidepressants starting to take psychedelics or even take psychedelics in order to titrate off their medications. But because I am not qualified really to talk about that, I usually just refer them to a guy I know who actually helps have these conversations. So yeah, I guess it's sort of like case management, overview, being able to find the right people who are the right experts to fill in those gaps.
And you know, really trying to also, like you're saying, stay in our lane.
Stay in our lane. Exactly. Because our lane is naturally broadening, like we've discussed before, you know, because when we broaden, our lane broadens, and yet still it's just a fucking lane.
So yeah, I'm with you.
I'll
refer out. But I have a lot of people that I work with who are on medications and are, you know, working with microdosing protocol.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen people have success with that?
I've seen quite a few people have success with that.
I feel like that really is one of the most exciting advancements in the psychedelic sort of renaissance is microdosing. I feel like that's where our sophistication is growing. And I don't know, I think antidepressants are a wonderful miracle for many people, but I also think they're way over prescribed. I mean, a lot of the teenagers these days like expect to be, you know, my teen's been like, why won't you give me something? I'm like, you're fine. She's like, just give me something. I'm like, I know, we all want something. I'm like, you give me something, okay? But yeah, I mean, we're a pill popping people, and there's a reason for that, because there's suffering and we want to alleviate suffering. And I think to reach for something, whatever it is the most natural thing in the world. And my hope is this process and this conversation just brings more consciousness and more empathy to it, because, you know, we're all just trying to feel better and get along, you know. I mean, it's not rocket science in that respect. We all want to feel better, and we have different opinions about how that can be achieved. Okay, sorry, I'm getting away from the question, which is your just to get a sense of how you prep and how you integrate.
So yeah, the other thing, of course, I'm going to talk about harm reduction, psychoeducation, things like that. But if it feels like somebody's a good fit for the work, then I'll start to do some resourcing with them, right? And resourcing is a part.
Tell us what that is. I know what it is and I love it. Tell us.
Yeah. So I'm trained in attachment-focused EMDR. So that's a modality that I use quite often, both in the prep and integration work and also in private practice work. So it would be helpful for me just to say a little bit about what EMDR is.
Yeah, please, just if you could just do all the 101 descriptions. Oh. Sorry, heavy lifting, over to you right now.
I will take this on. So EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, is It's a really powerful and effective therapy for trauma treatment. And so in EMDR, we're using this kind of bilateral stimulation, which could be eye movements, your eyes moving right, left, tones in the ears, right? Could be tapping. So it's any type of right, left movement, right?
Like stimulation?
Right? So it could be tapping right, left, even on the floor with your feet. And so we're using this kind of bilateral stimulation along with this comprehensive approach that can help people release and process, right? Feelings, body sensations, restrictive beliefs, disturbing images, information that's really gotten stuck as a result of trauma, right? In the body. In the nervous system. And attachment-focused EMDR is actually what I trained in, and that was a modality pioneered and taught by Laurel Parnell. And she's wonderful. She has tons of books out there. She actually has a book, I think, called Resource Tapping. So a lot of what I use in terms of resourcing one can find in that book. And you don't need to be trained in EMDR to do resourcing. It's a very gentle way.
And what is resourcing?
Yeah, so resourcing is really helping people to identify, right? Identify certain things that when they connect into this, it can really create a sense of peace. It can create a sense of nurturing in their nervous system. It can have a calming effect, right? So when we're resourcing with somebody, we're really looking for those types of qualities, right? If something negative is coming up, we'll stop and we'll see what's going on and what do we need to do. So, you know, a huge value in this is it really grows the client's confidence in being able to begin to self-regulate, right? Mm. They have these resources that they can go to and they feel, right, this shift in their nervous system.
Yeah, I like it as well because it's a way of sort of honing in on the parts of life that are already working. So it might be, you know, when you're with your cat, you feel really calm and you kind of take it for granted a bit, or you're like, oh, I'm so glad I have my cat. But in this kind of work, then you can actually, you know, be revisiting a traumatic situation, bring in your cat, remember the calm in your nervous system. And yeah, it's sort of like, it's like the gift that keeps on giving when you find these places in your imagination that kind of really work for you. And that's the other thing. I mean, I've noticed I'm newer to this work, so I'm kind of really stoked because I thought at first resourcing was kind of a bit lame, like go to your happy place and think of someone who makes you feel happy and good. And I was like, can we just skip this bit? Seems really like lightweight and so funny. And now I'm like, oh my God, this is fucking genius. And also in terms of how you can use your imagination, like one of my clients at the moment is very, he's a very cut off sort of young man. He's doesn't really have a social life. He's terrified of kind of launching and he lives a lot in his imagination. He's a bit of a genius. He's kind of robotics guy and he's, yeah, he can't immediately access resources, but we can find, he can kind of cobble together imaginary figures who could come in, you know, like if he revisits the chronic bullying that he suffered, he can kind of imagine bringing in this kind of bionic character and and then connect with emotions like rage and power that were kind of sublimated just to fucking survive. And so, yeah, I mean, I think resourcing is amazing. It's like, either identifying things that are already working for you in your life or imagining things.
Creating, right?
Creating.
It's the power of imagination. Because, you know, our bodies don't know if, our brains don't know, are we imagining it or is it really happening? And the same thing is happening in our nervous system, whether it's actually happening or not, right? or if it's just our imaginations. Our imagination is so powerful. You know, it also gives a lot of information. I've had people in the preparation, right, where we're beginning to have them connect into resources, right? So it might be having them connect into nurturing figures. And they've come in and let me know, oh, my childhood was great. I'm really close with everyone in my family. And then you have them try to come up with a nurturing figure and there's like nothing. And it really opens people up to, wow, I didn't even realize this was actually lacking, right?
Yes, so true. And yeah, and the categories as I remember them, at least in the training, are you're looking for nurturing figures, protective figures, wise figures.
Yeah.
And then there was one about place, right?
A peaceful place. So those are the basics. You know, but when I'm looking at helping prepare people for this type of work, we're going to run through those basics. I may also do some resourcing where we're doing some shamanic journeying to meet a body protector.
Ooh, how do you do that?
As an animal.
I like that. Oh, you got your own. Yes. Right? So you guide them through a visualization?
Yeah, guide them through a visualization to meet their body protector. So we're really developing a team so that when they come into the experience, right, the intensive, whatever journey they're doing in that way, there's a sense of feeling bolstered by this team that's around there that can come in and support if they want them to, right? It's a team of their choosing, right?
So I love that.
It's really powerful. And then the other way, you know, we can resource on, you know, I'll do this one a lot where I'm having them think about a time in their life where they had to really let go. They had to surrender, right? And I'll have them talk about it while they're tapping right, left, right? Using that bilateral stimulation and really honing in on what was necessary, what allowed them to let go, right? And so this is also a way of preparing for coming into a journey where you're letting go. You know, part of the work is being able to let go and really open and receive, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's amazing, all that preparation work. And I think it makes a difference. It's so great that
it makes such a difference. Yeah. People talk about it, right? Where they've done the kind of ceremonies where they just show up and there's really not a container for it versus, you know, having this container and feeling so held on either end of this experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so great that then they can come back to you. I mean, it's as you were talking, and I was thinking about this great process in EMDR of building a dream team and how well that works in terms of preparation for psychedelic experience or any kind of like deep dive. I was just, you know, going off on a fantasy of like, maybe we can, you know, replicate this. Maybe we can turn this into, you know, a VR experience or something, which is, I
love that idea.
He's so fun. Let's do it. So, okay. So that's our next plan. So I knew this was going to happen. We were going to create more work for ourselves. So every time I speak to you, that happens.
It does keep coming up.
Yeah. So there. I think it's a high class problem. So we'll do that for sure. But there is something about that one. I mean, back to attachment, one-on-one, you're seeing people, as am I, get into very, very vulnerable states, and trust and connection is so important because we become surrogates.
Yes.
We become the people who were not there when the bad thing happened or could not show up when the bad thing happened. Mm-hmm. It's not that we're so great. We're just someone who can be there and be loving and be non-judgmental and pay attention.
So there's the reparative piece, right, that comes through that client-therapist relationship, right, which is also part of it's a huge part of the attachment repair. Right?
It is, exactly. And that's, now I'm worrying again, but this also concerns me, Jenna, which is that, you
please
know,
share with me your concern. Tell me your worry.
The worry wart just is all over this psychedelic stuff. I'm like, I love it, but it worries me. I love it, but it worries me. It worries me because some of these medicines, let's talk about, for example, 5-MeO-DMT, which is a very, very strong melt of an experience. People call it like the caviar of ayahuasca, and it's a 10-minute total blast off into, gosh, I don't know, the next dimension. Very, very spiritual, very incredible medicine. And, but you know, it melts you. I mean, the last time I did it, I became a baby again. I re-experienced being a baby. And that was actually a mixed experience, but excruciatingly vulnerable. And, oh man, I was glad that I really trusted the guy that I did it with. Because you don't want to take that medicine with someone that you don't feel rock solid about. If you're, you know, if you're about to turn yourself back into a baby and potentially bond heavily with the person who's guiding you, you know, that's giving someone else a lot of power over you. So I feel like, you know, and we know this to be true because we've seen it throughout the centuries that, you know, people in the helping professionals and spiritual people and anyone who's given kind of that kind of power to really significantly help you can easily exploit the situation. So, and I don't think that just because someone has a therapist license means that they're going to be safe either. Not to make everyone worried, but I think we've got to really trust our guts on this.
Yes. I mean, I'm so glad you're bringing this up. And it really, I feel like we could talk about it for hours.
Yeah.
So we could go into with it. But because we're talking about EMDR as well, I'll just bring up this kind of parallel process, right? Where there are so many therapists who have attended a weekend EMDR training. And then they go out and they say, I use EMDR. And so they're using this power tool,
it's a power tool
that they trained on for a weekend, and it's actually dysregulating people. It's destabilizing people. People are going and saying, well, I tried EMDR and it was horrible and I never want to do it again.
I've heard that a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
Now I have to also own when I was new and more green with EMDR, you know, I had a couple sessions where they didn't go so well because I didn't quite know what I was doing, but I was in supervision. I was in consultation. And so I had that support to help then, you know, repair what happened in those sessions. But a lot of people are getting blown out or blasted out by people who are not trained really and don't have their own container around the work. Same thing is happening with, you know, people who are calling themselves psychedelic facilitators, right? So this is where I talk a lot with people about questions to ask the person that you're going to be sitting with.
Oh, tell us some of those. That sounds helpful. Yeah.
I think it's really important to ask them, how long have they been doing this? What got them into doing this? What kind of training have they had? How would they describe the mentorship that they received? How do they view the work with the medicines, right? For example, there's a lot of people saying, I work with plant spirit. I work with plant spirit. And they don't work with plant spirit. They work with the plant body. And it's all about, this is a tool, right? I'm going to give you a dosage. It's about ingesting, right? Anytime I hear those things, that's a red flag. This is not somebody working with plant spirit.
It's right? Very ungrounded, isn't it?
It's very ungrounded, right? Yeah. Or people who will have, you know, I should say this with a caveat. I think there are some people doing very good work who have standard protocols, right? Everyone that comes in, they get this dosage, they get this combination, they get this. I think there are some doing good work, but there are a lot, that's not good work.
Right, because it's an art, not a science, because we're talking about people and everyone's different.
That's right.
Yeah.
You give somebody one dosage, it's going to blow them out.
Yeah, so and this is where some of the new models are going to be tricky. You know, the sort of psilocybin gas station type models that we're talking about.
Yes. I think it's helping to train our clients on what to look for. What to ask? What are red flags?
Right. Yes, and that there's ultimately no greater authority than you. I mean, it's embarrassing, but it took me years to speak up again about my own sensitivity to medicine in general. So I do not need as strong a dose as most people. Yes. But I used to feel sort of ashamed of this and had some sort of sense of like, well, if the shaman gives me a full cup, I must have the full cup, and I'm weak if I don't want the full cup, or whatever it was. And I remember one ceremony where I was literally hiding from the shaman in my sleeping bag. I was like, he will not know that I'm here. I will not have another cup of ayahuasca. If I do, I will literally lose my mind forever, and I will not be able to be on this planet, which I would actually like to be on, at least partially. So, to advocate, you know, and to say, no, my body doesn't feel like, you know, maybe it's not that you're always sensitive to medicine, but maybe on that day you're feeling like it's not the day to go hard, you know, to being able to modulate, because light can be powerful too. It doesn't, you don't have to whack yourself over the head and send yourself into outer space.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you go. I'm done. Yeah, you go.
No, I love that. I think so many people can relate to what you're saying, because there is this perception out there. More is better. More is deeper. Do you want to go deeper? Why don't you want to go deeper? What's the, right?
Yeah. And what's wrong with you? Yeah.
Yeah. This idea of really helping people to feel agency, right? Yeah. This is collaborative, that this is about them tuning into their body, right?
And right, exactly. And being able to say what you want.
Yes.
What do you actually want? What do you really want from this experience? Yeah. Because I guess, I think learning to get out of this sort of system of proving ourselves, which is one of the toxic things that we've inherited, I think is part of what's exciting about this revolution, is sort of coming home to your own sense of what's right and what's true and what's aligned, instead of sort of like pressing ahead and trying to show up in a world that probably doesn't exist anyway, which is, you know, the world of other people's expectations of how you're supposed to be.
Yeah. You know, I just did this, I did a ketamine assisted psychotherapy session where I was the client, because I've been training in that modality. So I wanted to have a session of, you know, being the client. What is this like? What is it like to be online and doing this?
Were you doing EMDR while you were on the ketamine, or were you just receiving?
No, I was just receiving.
Right? How was it?
So it was actually really, really beautiful, and it exceeded my expectations. Ketamine was not a medicine I had felt particularly called to, right? But it is a way that I can offer psychedelic assisted therapy legally, right?
So you can do it. So if your client is prescribed ketamine by a psychiatrist, then you can do sessions.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I bring it up because, you know, in the session, it was a lovely therapist guiding this. In the session, she said, okay, now if you want to go deeper, take another, right? Mm. And she said it was very well intentioned, but I could hear that again, that if you want to go deeper, do more.
The way you said it was good. It was just like a little, had a little creepiness to it.
Now, the other thing that came up in this session, which I've heard is very rare, is, you know, 10 minutes into me peeking on the medicine, the Zoom connection dropped. And I don't even know how I knew, because I had the headphones, eye shades on, but the Zoom connection dropped. Somehow I knew. And it just kind of took over. I had to figure out now how to get back on Zoom. Now, for me, that's okay. It was actually, you know, there was something really valuable about that happening. But you imagine you have, you know, someone that has had real attachment wounding and has a lot around abandonment, right? And something like that happens. That's a huge break.
Gosh, yeah, that makes me think you need to do another round of resourcing to sort of prepare for that. You know, everything needs prep around the edges.
Yes, especially with, you know, there is this work. I think medicinal cannabis journeys are happening online now as well, right? So it's this interesting component when we now add this, you know, technology.
Right. We're adding psychedelics and technology pretty much at the same time, because, you know, it's only really been in the last year that we've the mental health workers en masse are online. I mean, my business has changed. I no longer have to live where I lived. I don't need to, you know, that's huge. And then you add this, you've got a lot of variables going on. But yeah, on the ketamine piece, I wanted to add, I'm really curious about your experience and how obviously ketamine can be used in so many different kinds of doses for so many different kinds of things. But I've been doing EMDR with a client who takes ketamine lozenges before EMDR sessions. We'll do this every other week. So every other week we do a session, and then in the intervening weeks we do a kind of integration. But we're still working within the 50-minute session, which I can't believe, but it's been so, you know, with this particular client who has complex trauma, it's been very hard to get into to revisit the worst stuff that happened for very good reason. Yeah. And what the, you know, even with EMDR, even with the resourcing, what the ketamine has done has just sort of brought down that level of sort of automatic anxiety. It's almost like, you know, when we revisit these places, like everything's surrounded in barbed wire, and it's like you're bumping against it all the time. So it's really hard to stay in the memory or in the, you know, in the process of the emotion that hasn't been sort of released back into the system. So the ketamine has just, it's sort of really helped bring that anxiety down and allowed us to get the work done. Stay with the memory and just clear it. I mean, it's been a game changer. So I don't know if it's for everyone and I'm new to it, but it seems really, really cool.
I've been wondering about that piece because, and I would assume, but I don't want to assume.
Yeah.
with something like that, you're working with a lower dose.
Yeah, I think it's much lower than the one that you had. It's non-psychoactive. It's more just like a relaxant.
So some of the defenses can relax a little bit, right? I really get that could be very powerful for some people.
For some people, yeah. Exactly. Results may vary.
Manualized. One way fits all.
Yeah, no, exactly.
We don't want that.
No, we don't want that. We're beautifully diverse human beings who all have different journeys. All right. So just to go back to, I've got a sense of the prep part of the process with you and the resourcing, and how much care you take to make people feel kind of like they are, that they have agency in the process. It's their journey. You're not the shaman telling them what to do. And then on the other side, what are you seeing in general, like after people have journeyed, and how do you help them integrate?
Wow, that's such a beautiful part. So integration for me, again, it's most important that they're really feeling held and supported. So I know when they're journeying, right? And I will actually do my own work of holding a little space for them and their intentions, right? Separate from the work that they're doing. And then they know they can reach out to me at any time after If I don't hear from them the night of, I'll connect with them the morning after, just to see, is there anything they want to connect on, anything they need support around, anything they want to share? How are they feeling physically, right? Because a lot of times, you know, it's really normal to go through this contraction afterward. So I think it's so important that people feel supported as they're going through that contraction, because people can, you know, have this really expansive opening experience, downloads, insights, all sorts of things. And then they go into the contraction. So now they're feeling headache, yucky, right? Some say like really exhausted or hungover. And if they're not supported through that, they can think, well, nothing really happened then. You know, it just, something happened there, but you know, I'm just going to go back to how everything typically is. So I like to offer a lot of support during that time, and they know they can connect with me at any time. And then in the integration sessions, it's actually a lot of what happens in the prep, in that, you know, they come out of a journey. And for many, like this is an example, a young man who was feeling really, really stuck in a lot of ways, and kind of had a sense there was something going on, but couldn't pinpoint what was happening for him. And when we had his integration session first, I always have them just talk me through the journey, whatever they remember, and adding the bilateral stimulation, right? Because that helps helps this integrative process, right? And I heard, you know, as he's talking me through, and this happens a lot, there were ways in which he was naturally resourcing himself through the experience. This was an MDMA experience, right? But he was connecting into all of these times in his life where he felt like he could be himself and he was accepted. Mm. And there were memories, there were particular people he hadn't thought about in years, right? A teacher, a friend's parent, right? And so it was this beautiful, none of the resources that came up when we were initially doing the prep, right? But all of these other resources. And then at the same time, he was able to see the attachment wounding in his own family of origin, how everyone was physically present, but no one was emotionally present. And how alone he felt, and how he felt like he had to act. There were certain things that were okay, right? In the family system, certain messaging. So it was this beautiful experience of him going into these painful memories, experiencing the feelings associated with that, and then this moment of a resourcing experience, and then moving back into the pain, and then another resourcing, right?
yes.
That's that inner healing intelligence.
Absolutely. Don't you find you just notice that pattern more and more? I see it as the figure eight, where you go into the pain and then out into the beauty, or you know, it's just
modulation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a beautiful example, and it just feels so sort of tender and human, and I think as my work gets kind of deeper and grows, I feel like in this sense we are the same, that we have this kind of you know, internally this sort of fragility and vulnerability, and it really isn't as simple as, you know, your parents were together or they weren't together, or you know, this bad thing didn't happen or it did happen. It's the meaning that we make of it, and That is a tenuous thing, you know. It's not a given. There's nothing sort of very solid in the equation when it comes to humans. But there is this, so there's this sort of tenderness and this susceptibility to being kind of misguided and making up stories that don't serve us. And then there's also this beautiful kind of resilience and creativity that we all have, that we can find ways to tap back into.
Yes, I think that's what I am, wow, just so blown away by again and again and again, is people's resilience. And like you said so beautifully, their creativity, right? That if just given the space, it's just there. It's ready to emerge. Mm. It's ready to move someone towards more healing, more wholeness.
What are your hopes for the future, both in terms of your own work and for this kind of, what should we call it, mental health revolution?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a big question. Well, I think in terms of my own work, probably weaves into my more overall, vision and hope, which is, my hope and vision would be that these sacred medicines are held and offered with respect, right, and integrity, and that they become more accessible through legalization, through being made available to people who are in underserved communities or marginalized communities, through good training and training of BIPOC facilitators. There is a lot emerging around this. And so seeing BIPOC in positions of leadership, I think, is really, really crucial. Mm. So I really want to support that. I think it's important that there's a multimodal approach to this, and it doesn't get co-opted by one particular modality, right? We've got the medical model, the psychological model, the shamanic, the indigenous models, right? I think it needs to be multimodal. I think this way of working offers a gateway for potent individual and collective healing at a time of really great collective suffering. And I personally believe that we're headed towards an evolutionary leap. And in order for that to happen, we have to endure old, outdated systems and structures and beliefs and conditioning breaking down. And we're seeing that. We're in it. We're feeling it. We're experiencing it. And it can feel chaotic. It can feel destabilizing, right, in a lot of ways, but I personally feel a lot of hope that this breaking down is really leading to a collective waking up.
I completely agree with you. I think, endurance is a great word to flag in terms of the collective breaking down. And my dream is that we learn in this sort of interim period before the next evolution fully kicks in, to sort of surf the broken pieces together joyfully.
together,
my dear. Yes, absolutely. Yes, I'm here for you, Jenna.
Yay! You're amazing. And I'm here for you.
Thank you, yes. Love. I know you are, and I really appreciate that. Thank you so much for showing up today. I loved our conversation.
Thank you. Me too. It was really an honor to be here with you. Great questions.
Good. Bye, darling.
Bye.